Welcome to episode 28 of Digital Outbox. Hello. Always feel quite relieved when we get to the end of that 20 seconds because it feels very long. Good afternoon again. It's Ian here. Joining me again is Chris. Hi, Chris.
Hello.
And how are we today?
Very jolly.
Good, good. Christmas is coming. And also joining us today, it's Shaquille.
Hello.
Hi, Shaq.
Hooray.
I had to do it once. Might never use it again.
Where's yours?
I've not got one.
Okay.
Honestly, you guys come up with one for me, and every week, like a dutiful podcast hoster, I will play it.
Well, I've got one for you. I just can't find it anywhere on the internet to download.
That sounds wrong. So I don't know about you guys, but the weather up here is like awful. It's totally misty for the last 3-4 days now.
Misty a couple of days ago, but it's fine today. It's fine and sunny at the moment.
So where have you been, Shaquille?
I've been around. Just, you know, resting.
Resting. So that hopefully means you're on tip-top form for today's stories.
Not quite, no. A little bit under the weather, but we'll see. See how it goes. I might have to take a holiday next week.
Don't work too hard.
First story is Google search event. So following on from the Bing event that we discussed last week, Google had their show on Monday with, I guess, a couple of new products that was quite interesting. The first one was Google Goggles, which I'm just pleased I don't have to say again.
Google Goggles.
Google Goggles.
You did say it again.
which is basically you point your camera on your Android phone at a object and it will upload the picture, recognize it, return you some search results all very quickly. So
that's interesting. Any object?
Well, it seems that the demos had very fixed objects like book covers and they were all with proper defined edges and, you know, white contrasting backgrounds. And I don't know if that was deliberate, but seemingly also works with landmarks. So if you point at a Big Ben, it should return search results for Big Ben.
Certainly their idea and their long-term aim for this is that you can point at anything and it gets you related results for whatever you've just pointed at. But I guess it's pretty restricted at the moment.
But it makes you think, you know, face recognition? Take a picture of somebody and go and do a search, please?
Ooh.
Well, it's in iPhoto. It's in all the quite a few applications.
Yeah, but it's all sort of like within your own photos, isn't it?
Yeah. So how would you feel? How would you feel if I took a picture of you and I went and ran a search and brought back your CV?
I don't like that.
I don't think I do either, but I mean, I think there's definite directions of these things, aren't there? That sounds like it could be somewhere it goes.
Yeah, I mean, can you imagine all the pedos out there taking pictures of kids and getting their address details and stuff?
And that is where the alarm bells just go off. It's how do you stop all that happening?
I'm sure they'll have some restrictions.
I guess it depends how things like this are stored and how do you store that kind of information? Do you have a file which is effectively your own facial recognition data set? Because obviously with objects and things like that, it can compare it to, you know, a painting or whatever, that it's a known image, isn't it?
Yeah.
That it can kind of work on.
But domain.
Yeah, and buildings and things, you know, can work algorithms on shape and stuff. And you can store that pretty happily without it causing anyone a problem. But facial recognition sounds dubious to me.
And fair enough, nobody's talked about it. It's just, it's the obvious thing that if you look at how it's recognising objects and covers and things in the real world, and if you look at the technology you have locally with face recognition, that somebody somewhere will put that together.
Well, Project Natal is going to work on facial recognition, isn't it? Tell who you are. And there's lots of robotics at the moment is working on that whole object recognition as well as faces. So
I'm pretty sure if it came along, there'd be a whole lot of options to opt out. I think that'd be the only way they could do something in the long term.
Yeah, I agree.
So it's currently Android only, but they did confirm that it will come to the iPhone. They're just a bit behind on putting the iPhone version together.
And why wouldn't they be? You know, why they're going to release it on their own platform first, aren't they? It's a
definitely
safe place to go and try it out.
Also announced was Google Real-Time Search, which is now returning real-time search results from Twitter and a few other places in amongst your normal search results. So you go to google.com and search for something, you'll get, so if you search for Tiger Woods, you'll see all the latest tweets about him as well. What was interesting for me was just the statistics. I need to always pronounce that properly. Behind this, each day they're now crawling 1 billion pages.
I know, incredible, isn't it? It's just amazing.
It just kind of blows my head.
Yeah, and not just crawling it, but crawling and storing it somewhere.
Yeah. And it's just it's the amount of information daily and then making sense of all that information. And they've also, one of the other questions I thought was interesting was, how do you prevent spammers, you know, taking advantage of, you know, I'm just going to start tweeting adverts and all that good stuff. They reckon they've got a really good system now that they've used behind, you know, Gmail and a few other products. So they're quite confident that they'll be able to cut spammers out.
I use Google Apps as my main email client for my sort of, well, most of my email addresses, to be honest. And it does a fantastic job at catching spam and letting through real stuff. It hardly ever gets anything wrong.
I think the good thing out of all this was just we mentioned it last week with the competition now between Microsoft and Google and Search. We're really starting to see some big new features.
Are you guys still using Google for your search, or have any of you shifted to Bing yet?
I still use Bing for images. I still get better image search results in Bing, but I'm still a Google person for...
Okay.
Yeah, I think Google have got they've now sort of embedded themselves as a search provider. When you download quite a few of the browsers now. So it's kind of still that whole penetration to go from that side of things. But Bing is definitely on my radar now. If I haven't found something in Google, I'll definitely Bing it now.
You'll Bing it.
There you go.
Broadband tax details have been revealed, Chris.
Yep. We've had Alistair Darling doing his pre-budget report.
Darling!
And so he's... given details that £6 a year pretty much on for anyone with a fixed phone line will go towards giving Wales broadband. Super fast broadband also mentioned for...
Why are you picking in Welsh?
Well, okay. And out of Scotland, probably.
But you live in the back of beyond. You don't get any 3G.
No, but that's not what they're talking about, is it? They're talking about fibre to the... Fibre to the boxes in the streets. So they reckon by 2017 they will have super fast broadband to 90% of the country. And I don't know about you, 2017 sounds an awfully long way away.
Yeah.
I think they're talking about fibre, aren't they? Their fibre network.
Well, what is their version of super fast broadband? I mean, it's fine having fibre, but...
What's the definition?
It's interesting, there was a story later in the week all around superfast broadband, and it's being loosely defined as speeds of 50 meg or faster.
So actually then that kind of says 90% of the country having that by 2017. It's a big job to get that to everyone, isn't it?
It's a big job, but at the same time, I mean, if you look at the statistics now, we're placed 21st out of 30, and this is looking at, I guess, the 30 most developed countries. Mm. You know, so fairly well down the pecking order. And it's only really, you know, the report, which we'll link to in the notes, actually said it's, you know, only if you invest in fibre networks are you actually going to get that kind of speed.
And to be clear, this tax is only going to be raising 170 million, or roughly thereabouts, a year. And BT's estimate is to get fibre to everyone, it needs 5 billion. And, you know, there's a big difference between 170 million a year and 5 billion.
Definitely.
Yeah, but is this tax going to be like permanent then? Do we keep on paying it forever and ever?
It still takes a long time to make 170 million into 5 billion.
But to keep paying it while, I guess, Labour are in charge.
Right. Okay.
Well, that's what it looks like, because Conservative have pledged to scrap it.
Yeah. Which is quite ironic, because the reason we're in a mess is still down to that bitch Thatcher. But anyway. By the Tory swine.
And I don't
dogs.
Trust Cameron anyway.
Oh, who does? I mean, he just looks a slimy toad, doesn't he?
I mean, Brown's a bit of a retard, but Cameron is just slimy.
Well, he's a one-eyed one.
And he breathes like a fish.
Moving on. Web firms are speaking out against the Digital Britain Clause 17, Chris.
Yeah, so we've been banging on about this in our cast. But now we've had Facebook, Google, Yahoo and eBay, amongst others, all coming out and sort of highlighting Clause 17 of the Digital Britain report. Oh, sorry, the output from the Digital Report has been the one that gives the Secretary of State all the powers to change copyright law as they see fit. They just believe that that's just it's too wide-ranging a clause to put into this report, and therefore they want it seen either removed or amended. I mean, the government have come out and said, just because the clause is there doesn't mean we're going to actually do anything with it.
Hey, right.
Then okay, just take it out. Let's make us all feel a bit more comfortable.
Definitely. Moving on, again a story we covered earlier in the year, and it looks like potentially good news. In 2010, postcode data will be set free alongside some ordnance survey data sets as well. So the government announced, I think it was on Tuesday or Wednesday, that they're starting a consultation period, and very quickly they hope to be making the Ordnance Survey mapping and postcode datasets available for free reuse from round about April 2010.
Which sounds brilliant.
It does sound brilliant.
Depending on what it is they actually end up releasing.
So seemingly it's not the path or the postcode address file that's going to be released, and that's the one that ties postcodes to addresses. So it sounds like it's going to be the actual, the geocodes of where that postcode resides that they're going to release. And it also depends how they release it, you know, and how they make it accessible. So still got time to, we still need to, I guess, wait until this consultation period's over.
Yeah, I think any release of this information is a positive thing, because even postcode to geocode is a good step.
Yeah.
But it sounds like they're holding back the main path file because they make money from it. And they don't want. I think they said that you know the post office puts a lot of money into monitoring and maintaining that.
Well, that's and they what the want post them office to be come to, out and said. Well, it sounds like the government and the post office haven't really been seen eye to eye in this. I think the government have put their political statement out, and then the post office, when asked, says, "Hold on, we put a lot of money into this. There's no way that we're releasing this data."
Yeah, and what that doesn't say is how much money the general public's put in via their taxes into this information as well.
Definitely. So, and a story that we should be keeping our eye on because it's got fairly wide-ranging implications. And it was in The Guardian this Friday. It's a US games company is suing a British blogger for content or for statements and allegations he made on his blog. But they ain't suing him in Britain. And they ain't trying to sue in America. They're trying to sue in Australia.
It's just so mad, isn't it?
It's a company called Evony. It's an online games company registered in Delaware in America. It's suing a guy called Bruce Everest for libel over a series of allegations that he's made on his website. And I guess this is the bit that's just it'd be amazing if it happens. But they've actually went to Australia and they're hoping that there's a hearing this Monday which will determine whether or not the Supreme Court in Australia has jurisdiction to actually try this guy. Now, for anybody that blogs online, this has got massive, massive implications.
And we've seen quite a few of these, you know, where do geographical barriers come in when it comes to jurisdiction on the internet?
Definitely. I mean, it's like, how would you feel if there suddenly is a country that is just willing to start, you know, taking people to court from anywhere around the world? And then how does their, you know, if I'm found guilty in another country, so how do I, what happens next?
Yeah, because within a country yourself, you're protected by double jeopardy. So if you get tried once, you can't be tried again for the same crime or whatever. But it seems like here, I mean, if this goes ahead, and there's nothing to say it will, but if this does go ahead, it means you could be tried in every single country around the world. For you know, minor infringement, and you can never go and defend yourself because obviously you can't travel around the world.
No,
being in court.
So hopefully it'll get thrown out on Monday. That would be what your little sensible head and everybody would say. But when it comes.
But then again, there's wider implications about, you know, are you defamed in every single country? It's not just your own country that you're being defamed in, is it? Especially if a product is due for international release.
Yeah, I think this is all. This is the route they're trying to take by saying it. Well, it's anybody around the world can read that blog site, so we'll take you to court anywhere in the world.
And it's fine while it seems like it's, you know, it's only a blogger here, and okay, it's got implications for blogging, but if these kind of rules aren't, you know, taken care of, it could be protecting some pretty bad criminals by them just living somewhere and not in other places.
But it's not just blogging, it's journalism and everything. You know, it's basically any content that somebody wants to publish online, you could be taken to court with anywhere in the world.
Yeah.
Shady. Very shady. This is probably more Shaquille's story, but Chris will lead on it. Facebook improves privacy control.
Yeah, but still doesn't seem to have actually done the right thing. So they've updated the way that you can fine-grain control your privacy and who sees what. But effectively, when you log in now, it'll tell you that you need to update your privacy policy, and it'll take you to a page, and the default settings are for all your content to be open to everyone on the internet, and it doesn't make that particularly clear that it's not just all your friends. It's actually every, you know, it can be searched, all your pictures can be found, all your updates can be seen, and that's the default position. Whereas you'd expect and want a company to the default position to at least be restricted down to a more sensible level. But it seems like every time they try and do these things, they sneakily try and get in and open up everything. I mean, obviously their business model relies on their content being open as possible.
So Shaku, you're more of a Facebook user than us two. But...
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to defend Facebook, but I think to be fair to them, when they did introduce these new privacy controls, when you go into the first time you go in to put a post up, you do get like a pop-up giving you, you know, like some basic information, and it's enough of a hint to like the average user to, oh, maybe I should go and review my existing, you know, privacy and security controls I've set up. And I think everybody should do, but like Chris said, I don't think they've done enough of a good job, because I've got a friend who for years has been interested in Facebook, but he didn't want to join just because he's a bit of a private person. You know, he didn't want anybody searching for him, and he only wanted to add certain people to his friends list and not everybody else. And recently, well, a few days ago, he bought an iPhone, so he's been quite excited about that, and I sent him a list of some of the apps that he can download and use. And two of them were obviously in Twitterific and Tweety for Twitter and the Facebook app. So he's been enjoying using Twitter for the last sort of few weeks anyway, and now he's got it on his iPhone. He's quite happy. So I sort of encouraged him to open a Facebook account, which he did, and he was a bit annoyed that he only wanted to add like a couple of people as friends, but then because friends of those people saw him on Facebook, they managed to add him as a friend.
Right,
but he didn't want them to know that he was like on Facebook. He thought like, because he went through and changed all his privacy settings to like friends only, and the search option, you know, like by default, I think anybody can search for you, even Google can search for you, but you can turn that off so that, you know, you don't appear in any search results. He'd done that, and which is fine. So if I search for him, I can't see him, but if I added friends as a friend to my list, my friends can see, you know, in that live news feed that you get, they will see that, you know, Shakula's made friends with such and such, and then they can click on them.
And I think they've updated that now, so it can, no, you can just say...
I was kind of curious, and I think it was either yesterday or the day before, I said, I don't want to mention this guy's name, and I said, look, how about we do a bit of test? So I removed him from my friends list. He did the same to me. And then we changed all our privacy settings to, like, you know, like friends only. I mean, whatever possible, we try to change them. So when I searched for him, I couldn't find him, and vice versa, he couldn't find me. And then I added him to my friends list, and I can't remember how exactly it went, but I added him, and immediately in my sorry, no, before I added him, I looked at one of my friends already had him in his friends list, so I clicked on my friend and then went to his friends list, and I could still see him in there. So, there's a privacy setting to see, you know, like, only friends or friends can see you, but you can't change that to say only friends can see me, you know, if you know what I'm saying. Because there are two options to say everyone can see me, or friends of friends can see me.
Yeah, so you still can't lock it down to the level that you want to lock it down to.
Yeah, so I could see him through my friends list, and which is kind of, it's not an ideal situation for, I think, quite a few people out there. So, you know, to give credit to Facebook, I think that they are making changes, but they're still not enough.
Yeah. I still don't think the average 14-year-old is going to look at that box and think, this is something I have to go and do.
The only, yeah, true.
The only thing I didn't like was the first time you logged in after this change, they gave you that kind of, you know, it was like the kind of pop-up, usual Facebook pop-up screen, and it gave you all the, what was your previous settings and what you kind of really should be. And But that screen doesn't exist when you actually go into your settings. Your settings are all spread out amongst different screens. Yeah. And I don't know why they've you know, designed a screen which I think deliberately said, we really want you to start sharing out your content because we're doing all these deals with Google. And that's the bottom line. For years, Facebook was all about friends sharing information with friends, not about, you know, indexing on Google and getting, you know, real-time news out there. Twitter's different. You know, Twitter was always about that. And then Twitter was always the, let's post a tweet up, let's share that information, let's go and find all that quickly. Facebook was always different from, it was always more people that I knew.
We've seen companies happily use Facebook now to vet employees, keep an eye on them, monitor them, stop them getting jobs or even take their jobs away from them, all because of stuff that's happened on Facebook.
Yeah.
Therefore, the default position for a young person to have all their information out there and in the open is just nothing I would recommend about that at all.
Definitely.
I would say lock it down as much as you can, let your friends see it by all means, but employers are willing to use that information in making their decisions, and I don't want employers knowing what I did as a kid sometimes, you know.
Well, the thing that gets lost is you need to remember when you're a kid, you know, and you do things that you might not necessarily, you know, would do now, or you're proud of, or you would even consider doing, but you did.
Exactly.
We've all got skeletons in the closet.
But I don't think it's even just, you know, kids. You know, it's the same for adults. And maybe even business to business, if they're looking at a particular person. And, you know, it's just not... Okay, it's for Facebook, I think it's important that they have it as open as people want it to be. But I think they have to take the stance that they let people open it up easily rather than having to actually clamp it down. As in it shouldn't be up to the individual to clamp it down.
I mean, they've got the biggest online community. It's 350 million people they're talking about. You know, it's massive when you just think about, you know, their position. If they were a country in the world, where they would be right now. It's just immense. So a change like this has got massive, massive implications for us.
Talking of releasing information that most of us wouldn't want to have out there.
So we'll finish off this little news section with a story I picked up of a best man who has, he promised the groom that he would do no jokes, you know, before or during the wedding. And to be fair, he was true to his word. However, he has now set up a Twitter account called Newlyweds on T-Job. So Newlyweds on T-Job, which is Newlyweds on the job.
Isn't it on T-Job?
Well, I didn't want to say it like that. And when the Newlyweds have sex, it will automatically tweet. It will automatically tweet the start time, the end time, and a frenzy rating.
This is just perfect.
It's class. I love it. It's absolute class. And it sums up the year of Twitter for me. We started off at the start of the year with people using Twitter accounts to automatically tweet when they do a crap. And now we end it with a couple who are tweeting while they sex.
Does the wife know about this?
Seemingly the couple don't know anything about it.
Right, okay. That's just brilliant.
So,
I'm more intrigued in the technology behind it. How do you set up a bed to tweet
Well, if you give me a brief moment, I think I can probably.
I'd imagine he's got some sort of sensor to guess the weight when they actually get on the bed.
It's a pressure sensitive pad.
It has got weight. It tells you how heavy the
link is.
Pressure sensitive pad. So the guy's on the bed just by himself, you know, having a little bit of solo action.
That's it. He'll only register 80 kilos rather than 100. Yeah.
So the link on the TechCrunch article takes you through to the Instructables website, which I don't know if you've been to before. It's actually a very good website. And it's how to set up a twittering office chair. So it's based around that same technology, which is, you know, you sit down, it will send out a tweet to say, I've sat in my office chair. Maybe we all need Twitter accounts just to stalk our activity.
Just fantastic.
I'm in the car.
Oh, hang on. Job number two's up. Action conclude at 4:12 GMT. Duration 22 minutes, 5 seconds. Frenzy index is 4. That's easy listening. judges comment, good work.
And the thing is, I don't even know if this is a spoof. I doubt it.
I don't care. I don't care if it's a spoof or not. It makes me laugh.
Moving on, we have a few Apple stories to welcome Shaquille back into the fold. Google Chrome beta, Shaquille.
Yeah, I've tried it and I thought, yeah, it looks fine, but I just can't see a reason to move from Firefox or Safari, which is the one I use the most. But, you know, for some people might be a good option. It's now available. And still no extension support.
No.
But, you know, it's a development build.
Well, and the beta build doesn't have it. Development build has extension supports now.
Oh, okay.
So you can, and it's got the bookmark manager and syncing as well. So if you download the dev build, you can get that now.
Okay. I mean, I've not used Chrome on, like, Windows, but are there a lot of, like, extensions and plugins available for it? Like,
well, they've only just
Firefox.
They've only just been released, starting to be released on the Windows version as well. So it's still a very new thing. The whole point of Chrome to start with was that it was just a browser. It didn't have all the vulnerabilities that extensions bring with them. But recently, they've just released all that.
Yeah, and I mean, on my work machine, I do have Chrome, and it's just so much faster. So that's on Windows.
I think on a Mac, you've got the option. I mean, Firefox obviously is a great browser anyway, Safari is a great starting point.
Firefox on the Mac, I find really slow compared to Safari.
I do as well.
Safari is just like, honestly, just, oh, spanks it.
Yeah.
Even starting up. You know, I start up Safari and I start up Firefox and I come in, I'm in browsing Safari and Firefox is still having a think.
Like, that's probably why, you know, it's not such a big deal when it's released on the Mac. It's because, you know, Safari is such a great starting point.
Yeah.
And even the PC version of Safari is, you know, rock solid.
Yeah.
But Chrome was, a really good release on the PC because the default of Internet Explorer is so poor.
Oh, no, definitely. I mean, Chrome on the PC, it's really, really nice.
Firefox is compliant.
Yeah. I think, Ian, you said that you found it faster than Safari.
The Chrome?
Chrome on the Mac.
Yeah. Seem to be, but because it's missing some extensions, but
yeah,
I just find things, you know, I'm not going to use it.
Okay,
you know, so I use Xmarks to sync all my bookmarks.
Yeah,
and yes, I can import the bookmarks from Safari when I first started Chrome, and so I've got that set there. But it soon becomes out of date, and even just things like, you know, the flash blockers and stuff like that. There's just little things that I've got in Safari that just make it far nicer.
Okay. I mean, personally, I haven't really noticed much difference. I know I read some articles a few days ago and they reckoned that Safari was still slightly faster than Chrome. But like, no, like you said, obviously you've now got a few plugins that you use, so maybe...
Yeah, I just can't... For you. I mean, at the moment, when I was going through some notes from the year just a few days ago, when Safari first came out, I didn't enjoy it. I found it, you know, quite crashy, and I stuck with Firefox. And then there was a release, I think it must have been about sort of 4 months ago, came out, that I just found the stability was just sorted. It was rock solid. Never crashes for me. Speed's excellent. And the only time I've got Firefox open it's almost like my secondary browser, so I do all the podcasting notes in it so that all my logins don't clash, you know, for all the different Google accounts.
Okay.
And if I need to use, what do you call it? Oh, the thing that I can't remember, Firebug. if I ever need to go in and delve into Firebug, then that's what I've got Firefox for.
Okay.
But that's really it on the Mac. So part of me feels it's almost like I don't really need another browser.
Yeah, I feel the same way.
You know, and I think Chris has made an excellent point in the PC, but I think it is really a good competition for Firefox.
I'd rather see everyone move away from Internet Explorer at the moment to anything other than that. So Firefox, Chrome, Safari, whatever you want, just not Internet Explorer.
So an app that has been talked about for a long time finally got launched this week, a Ustream Live Recorder. So for many months, you've been able to fire up Ustream or Quick on an Android phone or on if you actually jailbroke your iPhone, and you'd be able to live stream your video. Well, that app's now finally been released this week. I gave it a try. I think Shaku was watching. I can't remember what I was doing. It was nothing rude. So you were watching. It was about a 10 to 20 second delay.
Yeah.
But it actually worked pretty well.
I was impressed. I mean, I had the volume down on the Mac, and I didn't realise that there was it was like a proper video with sound and everything. And it's just, I think by the time I turned it up, realised the sound turned up, you'd finished. But quality-wise, you couldn't really fault it. I didn't know at the time that there was a delay.
Yeah.
All I know is you sent me an MSN message, I think.
Yeah.
And but yes, for something that's free, you know, that's really impressive.
And you can set up the Ustream account free, the app's free.
Yep.
And what's quite nice in the app is that I can actually tweet out or send out on Facebook a link to the when I'm live streaming.
Yeah.
So if I was out doing something somewhere and I wanted, you know, some of my friends to see it, I can send that out. And also on the app itself, you're getting, as people chat to you from the Ustream page, that appears on your app on the iPhone. So you can actually respond to people live as you're broadcasting.
Do you have to see this live? Is it only a live stream or does it record?
No, you can save the stream. I didn't bother saving the stream the other day because all you saw was my laptop and my TV. And then I think there was a shady picture of me.
when you save your stream, can you then set it to broadcast at a different time later on in the day?
I don't know. I'd need to. Okay. I've not used Ustream enough. It's something I want to, over Christmas, I may have a little bit of play around with.
Well, what I liked about it is obviously I thought it might not work on the 3G iPhone, but it does. So that's quite impressive. And I think, but on the 3G, because it doesn't record video, I'm pretty sure you can't save your video once you've done.
Right.
But I think on the 3GS you can.
Yeah.
I'll need to look into that in detail. But
so you can. So you just with the camera can still do video, yeah?
Yeah, I think I can just stream it.
Yeah.
And that's it. And when it's done,
I hadn't realised that. I imagined you wouldn't be able to.
No, the old jailbroken app actually came out for the 3G, not the 3GS. You know, so people that jailbroke, there was a lot of people, I'm sure it was like last October, November, jailbroke their iPhone and it was either Quick or Ustream brought out an app that actually worked for the 3G.
So okay.
You can.
Well, I guess you see it on the screen, don't you, at the time?
Yeah. And the video quality was all right.
Yeah.
You know, I was inside, it wasn't a particularly bright light. You know, I'm pretty sure.
Bright light.
I'm pretty sure if we're out and about outside, you know, it would actually be quite nice.
This sounds like a service that's going to be free to start with, but if anyone starts using this big time,
well,
they'll soon lock down on it.
Ustream's been free for a few years now, as is Quick. So, and I think there are paid options if you want to do some different things around it.
Mm.
Still, it was good to see.
Yep.
Finally, Tesco iPhone pricing came out, and it is actually, unlike we predicted and we thought it was just going to be the same, it was actually very different to the other providers. Well, I thought it was anyway.
Yeah, it confused me to start with.
Yeah, so there's. I'm going to get this wrong because I'm probably not. There's two different rates. You can get a 3GS for £20 a month on a 12-month contract, or you can get it for £60 a month and you can get it on a 24-month contract, I think is right.
I think that's what I understood it as.
The 2 year contract, the iPhone's free?
The 3GS one I don't think is.
Ah, right, okay.
But the 3G one is free on the 2 year contract, yeah.
Yeah. But on the yearly one you need to pay for the handset both times.
Yeah.
So out of O2 and Orange. Tesco is actually the highest cost per month on the 3GS or the 3G. But what they seem to be appealing for is we're offering a 12-month contract.
Yeah.
CNET worked out over the same periods that, because obviously with the 12-month contract, you're only locked in for 12 months. So if you spread that out over the sort of 18-month contract that you have to have with O2, it actually works out cheaper.
Yeah, but you're not going to keep it for 18 months. To me, the whole point of 12 months...
But to compare like for like...
Yeah, but you're not... Well, to me, the whole point... Our bugbear when we go back to 3G... Yeah. And the CGS coming out was, we're locked into 18-month contract, we're gadget fiends. Mm. And if you're on a 12-month contract, then, and this is the issue, because if you start it now, you're going to miss probably the next iPhone, which will be, I guess, June-July time again.
Yeah.
But if Tesco get the iPhone June-July, then a 12-month contract is very appealing, because you're then just thinking, well, I'll get the next hardware release. And I can't see many people taking a 12-month contract, especially geeks, who we tend to talk about.
I don't think geeks are going to be buying it from Tesco's.
Why not? It's the only place that does a 12-month contract.
It's cheap enough.
The 12-month contract, I think, is going to get a lot of people, not just now, but I think come June, July time. If they can offer the new iPhone that comes out then,
yeah,
in a 12-month contract, I'd be very interested.
You're not on any contract now at the moment, are you?
Well, my contract, my 18-month from the 3G, I guess, finishes now. So I was going to give O2 a phone and drop down to their lesser contract.
Will that still tie you in then?
No, because you can move to a simplicity contract under O2 and you can make it monthly. And instead of paying £35 a month, I pay £20, but I lose visual voicemail. Damn. which is no great shakes to me.
Okay. What else do you lose?
I think that... Wi-Fi. Free Wi-Fi access, which again...
You hardly ever use that, though, don't you?
No.
Just use 3G.
Even at the airports, like the Wi-Fi you get sucks.
Yeah.
You know, it's just... I just can't be arsed. So the only thing I thought at first, and they didn't clarify it, but they said there was the £60 was unlimited internet access, but there was a fair usage policy. But it turns out the fair usage policy is a terabyte of data a month.
It's the first fair usage policy that's actually come out, and you're thinking, wow, that's more than I'm ever going to need.
But you just think, why did you bother putting a fair usage policy on it? Seems a bit bizarre to say you can only use a terabyte.
I mean, do you think it could be something to do with tethering if you...
I don't know.
Okay.
So, at least it was something a bit different. It makes me actually think Vodafone might try and do something slightly different as well.
So do you know which network Tesco's will be using? Is it the O2 network?
So the Tesco, I think it's called Tesco Mobile. That's a 50-50 joint partnership with O2.
Right, okay.
So O2 owns 50% of that company. As Tesco owns the other 50%. So it's not going to change how good your reception is. Right. If you're struggling with O2, then Orange or Vodafone are probably your only options. I was going to say our final Apple story, but it's not, because I want to moan. we mentioned last week, or it wasn't last week, a few weeks ago, Nokia suing Apple. So Apple have now decided to sue Nokia. Don't know if any of you guys have looked into that story.
Not in detail, no.
Right. I haven't, because it all just sounded childish.
Well, but all these things are. Nokia sued Apple for 10 patent infringements, and Apple's turned around and sued them for 13 patent infringements.
Miss, Apple stole this from me.
But did Nokia did this? Well, what seems to be the difference?
Stop snitching now, go away.
Well, one of the differences seems to be that one of the commentators says, why didn't Apple just pay up for Nokia's GSM patents like everybody else does? But Sima Nokia wanted some sort of terms and conditions that they got access to some of Apple's patents at the same time. And that's why Apple said sod off. We ain't paying for that and giving you access to some things. So the official Apple statement was quite nice. Was other companies must compete with us by inventing their own technologies, not just by stealing ours.
Well, doesn't Apple still think it owns the right to multi-touch gestures and things like that? I think they still think that.
It believes it's got a patent, but it sounds like they're only going to apply the patent when and if they're challenged. Because I thought they would start, you know, when the Palm Pre came out, I thought, well, they're going to sue them. Because when they first showed the iPhone, they went, we've got this locked down patent-wise.
Do you think they're using it as leverage then to get other bits that they want?
Don't know.
I don't know if you can do that with a patent.
It's all very murky.
Attack some people and not others.
Yeah, it's all very murky. Anyway, I think this is my only moan this week. But a couple of really nice apps came out for the iPhone, but not in the UK. So IMDb app came out. It's only available in America. Got nice reviews. I think that'd be quite handy to have all that content on the iPhone. And a second app, Dragon Dictation, came out, which actually dictates and seemingly works very well. So, yeah, that just annoyed me. I hate location lockouts like that, you know, like your YouTube exclusives and Hulu, and it just makes me stabby.
It just feels totally just wrong in a...
I'm sure they'll come out here eventually. I mean, do you remember that Photoshop.com?
Yeah, and that's
we didn't get that for about a month or 2 months.
Well, I think it was in even the Amazon app.
Yeah.
I think it took about 6 months before it came out here.
Yeah.
I actually bought something on it last week. It's far too easy. And the other thing that's making me stabby, I'm still struggling with my iPhone and updating apps.
Stabby Joe.
It's still not working.
No, and I'm reading online, there's loads of people with the same issues. So
something on my iPhone's gone seriously awry. It just it's
because you're a hater.
It stalls. It doesn't sync. It gave some sort of iTunes today announced that it couldn't sync because iTunes my iPhone gave an unexpected response.
Oh.
And then I tried to basically unlock the phone and it hung itself for I don't know what must have been a good minute.
I think so. It's something to do with Windows 7.
Well, certainly Windows 7 and iTunes don't seem to be as playing
well,
ball, but
I still have issues with apps getting updated, but I also noticed as Reader came out with a new version this week.
And Reader looks quite good, actually.
Sorry, what was that?
Reader looks quite good.
It's very nice, works really well. But on the developer's blog, they did say that if you're struggling to update it, then go the USB route rather than over the air. So okay. I think there are people with lots of issues right now.
Well, I'm going to go the opposite direction. See, I've been really happy with my iPhone the last couple of weeks because I was getting a bit worried after my Mobile Me account, which expired, I think, beginning of December. I thought, oh, I'm going to, you know, struggle to keep my contacts and all that in sync. And then I discovered the joys of Google Sync. And I've been really, really happy. And I will put up an article on the blog about, you know, some of the things that I did and some of the issues that came across. But overall, it seems to be working fine.
No, it does work really well.
Occasionally, I get like double entries in my calendar appearing randomly. But, you know, for something that's free, I'm not too fussed about it.
Good.
So, yep, quite happy with that.
Yeah, that'll be a handy post because I think there's a lot of people just think Mobile Me is the only way to keep everything in sync. And it's not. It's
I think Mobile Me is good.
Makes it easy.
Yeah, a lot of the services it offered, I just didn't really use. Or, like, for example, iDisk can be useful. You know, you've got 20 gig. But I found it really clunky and slow compared to Dropbox.
Well, so, it's night and day compared to Dropbox.
Yeah, so I thought, why do I pay for this when I hardly ever use it?
Definitely. Pixel Junk Shooter came out in the PS3 this week. Me and Shaquille love Pixel Junk games. I think a lot of people love Pixel Junk games.
Yep.
I've only rattled through the first kind of area, which I think is about 4 levels in Pixel Junk Shooter. But what a lovely game.
That's beautiful. I think it's the concept is so simple, isn't it?
Yeah.
It reminds me of something like an old game.
Thrust.
A bit of Thrust, but no, there was another game similar to that. And but yeah, it's just lovely.
What
it's
I like
really, really simple.
Yeah, it's really simple. The graphics are nice and simple, but they're very, very clean.
Yeah,
very, I don't know, just very nice feel to them.
And what I liked, you probably like as well, the animation of the water and the way it flows. It's just
it feels lovely. Very physical, you know. It feels very real, you know. And it's like when you do daft things, like, you know, when you pour the water on the lava and it starts to, and then you start blowing it up and you see the lava flowing in again.
Even when you fire the rockets, the way they sort of project out your ship, and it's like beautiful. I've got to confess, I was a bit of a cheapskate, and one of my friends had bought it, so I used his account to download on my PS3 as well.
You thief. You absolute pikey thief.
Yeah. But yeah, highly recommended, I think.
Definitely. When Chris buys his PS3 next year, definitely with the pixel junk games are ones to cast your eye over.
Yeah.
I shall do that.
Boxy or Boxy. Don't quite know the right pronunciation.
Boxy.
I'm going to go for Boxy because it makes sense in my head. Me and Shaquille both tried Boxy. Well,
and we
I was
supposed to put up a.
So we did a bit of a show around Plex, and I really do like Plex as a media player or a media library playback to, you know, software. And Boxy is similar. It's based on Xbox Media Center, but it's more social. So Shaquille, when he first installed it was posting up all these different basically adult films that he'd been watching, and you know, anybody on his Twitter and Facebook could see that he'd been watching this copious amounts of porn. So Boxy is a lot more social. There's a new version coming out next year in January, and it's certainly, the front end looks very polished compared to the previous version, so I can't actually wait to try it.
Yeah, I mean, to be clear, Boxy, I mean, I know we're going to talk about something in a second, but Boxy is effectively the piece of software, and it's open source. That's
yes.
Right. And you can develop apps for it as well.
Yes.
But effectively, it's so all about playing.
There's a whole different
media.
There's a whole different range of apps for it. So you can like plug in iPlayer, and you can plug in other bits and pieces, so you can actually, you know, watch different forms of content. And it's all around streaming media, whether it be media on the internet or media you've got sitting locally on a NAS or on a hard drive.
Yeah.
And I mean, it does work well, but I think at the time I certainly preferred Plex. I just thought Plex was a far better option.
I found Plex far better option in terms of it could find my local media.
Yeah.
Sort of list it properly.
And
whereas with Boxy,
it kind of muddled everything together.
Yeah.
It was like,
yeah,
Here's video, and the video might have been a West Wing episode you've got stored, and a West Wing trailer from YouTube. Or you know, and probably a bad example, but I just couldn't find things as easily as I could with Plex. It didn't support, I mean, some of the front end options in Plex are gorgeous. You know,
yes.
It really makes it feel like you've got, you know, you've got your media, and it's like all the nice bits from like the DVD inserts are almost on your screen.
And Plex is Apple only, that's right, isn't it?
What was that?
Is Plex Apple only, is that right?
Yes.
No.
Oh, no,
is
Plex
not?
Is, yeah.
Is it?
I think Plex is Mac only.
Okay. Let me just have a quick look.
Yeah, I'm doing the same. Yeah, Plex Media Center for OS X.
Ah,
yeah.
Yes.
Sorry, I shouldn't say X. OS 10. What a noob. Sorry, Henry. Interestingly, they've also announced the Boxy Box, which is going to be coming out. They're hoping, I think, it was second quarter next year. Now, when you first see this box, it looks... I thought it looked lovely.
I think it's like amazing.
But it almost reminds me of the old Xbox with the kind of the front half cut out, and it's standing on that cutout section.
Well, it looks like it's sunk into the shelf it sat on.
But the picture that really got me was when somebody placed a Coke can next to it, and you realise
how small it
is. Tiny.
Yeah.
So this is going to be hopefully a $200 box, Wi-Fi enabled, SD slot, HDMI, all the right connections at the back, plus two USB ports. And it'll be running in the Boxy software.
Yeah, and so they've been talking a long time about getting, you know, hardware. So rather than just supplying the software, they're going to, you know, supply the hardware that sits under your TV, so that makes it a lounge, you know, proposition, if you like. But $200 isn't a lot of money. I imagine when it comes over here, if it comes over here, you're talking sort of £200 equivalent. But would you be better buying off a net top, you know, one of these tiny PCs that can sit in, you know, the same place, which is what this is going to be based on?
Well, I think that's my frustration when I look at the PS3 and Xbox, because they can play back media, but it's just the things they can't play back.
Is this Boxy thing, is it going to be, it's not going to have any storage in there, is it?
No, it's, I mean, it's got an SD slot, and it's got two USB ports.
So it's only
Wi-Fi
to
enabled.
Stream media from like an external source.
Either your network or the internet or an attached hard drive, yeah.
Oh, okay.
And just, so obviously...
I look at it as a small PC that's going to run Boxy.
But for $300 or maybe $400, you can get a full PC running Windows that you
that's
can install the software on.
I thought, what's the purpose of this?
Well, I think it's cheap enough that it could be a success.
Yeah. And I think they've done a good job on the design. It's, you know, it looks desirable.
It's gorgeous, yeah.
And then there's other things that I guess was running through my head, like, could it be powerful enough to support something like that on live, you know, gaming, streaming stuff? You know, so could it do that?
But then again, if you buy a Nettop, you're more likely to have that power to be able to do something like that than this box.
But you'd need to go to Windows.
Nah. Well, unless Apple get their acting gear.
Ah, Mac Mini.
I still reckon that'd be a perfect thing. You can have Plex running under your TV.
It will happen.
Okay.
My head now says yes.
You need that Drobo first.
Ordered.
Was that what you did on your Amazon app?
Oh, no. No, Amazon app was a Christmas thing, but no, the Drobo's now... The purchase has gone green. My 2 1.5 terabyte drives I've ordered as well. And Mac Mini will be a New Year purchase.
Anyway, sounds like you're getting it sorted.
Anyway, moving on. Exciting news, kind of. We're all iPhone owners. But one of our friends, Brian, his iPhone has gone kaput through the week. So I think he's had enough of iPhones and O2s. He's looking for a new phone. So one phone that might be an option is the Google phone. So basically yesterday, Friday, Google handed out, it looks like hundreds, if not thousands, of phones to its employees. They then put up a post yesterday saying, and they called the post Android Dog Food Diet for Holidays. And basically they were saying they're handed out this phone and they're going to be using it as a test bed amongst their Google employees for new products that they're developing. But then I think it was New York Times today, I've officially said it's a Nexus One. It's the hardware is built by HTC, but this is the Google phone. It will be released in January. They will sell the phone direct online, and it's unlocked. So you buy the phone and you put in any SIM you like, and crack on. So what do you guys think of that?
Well, I'm quite surprised it's happening because I see, you know, like a lot of people, I assume that some of their agreements with these other hardware manufacturers was they wouldn't come and compete in the hardware stakes. But now I think it's very important. I think it's much easier to push the Google phone rather than trying to push an operating system.
I think it's good in terms of, like, you know, competition for the iPhone. Other than that, I think I'd have to see it in action.
Yeah, and that's how I feel. I mean, certainly the tweets from the Google employees, seemingly they're not allowed to talk about it, but they've been tweeting about it.
Yeah.
So one of the tweets was, yeah, it's a hot, sexy mess, and I mean that in a good way.
Yeah. Obviously, we've all sort of seen the videos of the software itself, Android, to a certain extent, and that looks quite promising. The hardware,
The hardware in the pictures, which are limited at the moment, it didn't really say wow to me.
I'd be surprised if there's not, you know, a version 2 pretty quick after that's coming on more dedicated hardware, because it does sound like almost a hack together at the moment.
Yeah.
Well, the thing that I think it said, it was a similar form factor to the iPhone with a smooth brushed metal looking shell instead of a glossy one.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, I think if anything, like Chris said, it'll at least give you that initial sort of exposure, you know, to, here's a Google phone. And then other third-party companies could come along and say, right, here's, you know, our version of the same phone with the same software. And then you might get a bit more innovation as far as hardware goes, hopefully, fingers crossed.
But how hacked off would you be if you were Motorola right now? All that effort in the droid, all that advertising, and then this has come out a month later?
Yeah.
Well, that's why I'm surprised that we're seeing it.
But the software's still the same, though, isn't it?
No. So it's not Android. It's not Android 2, which is on the Droid. It's 2.1, and seemingly the rumor is Google has put a lot of effort into tweaking the stock Android interface.
Well,
I imagine that 2.1 will be open source and available to other handset.
Surely they'll be able to upgrade.
This is a bit I don't know, because I think there's always been there's the 2.0 and the 2.1, the 2.x Android, but then it's up to each individual handset maker to do what they want with it. And the bit of text I read today seemed to infer that Google's actually put a lot of unique features on this phone compared to other
Well, obviously, the idea of Android is that you can tailor it towards your hardware. Mm. And I think what Google have maybe been frustrated about is the fact that people haven't quite got the hang of tailoring their operating system to the hardware it's on. So they're taking this opportunity to show what Android can be and should be. And, you know, it's up to, you're right, it's up to other hardware manufacturers then to tweak for their, I'd platform.
I'm not even convinced by that. I think
it sounds, to me, it sounds kind of, I mean, you know, like with the iPhone, no matter what version of iPhone you have hardware-wise, you can upgrade to the latest software.
Mm.
So what I'm hearing from you guys sounds like the Motorola Droid, they're stuck with what they've got.
I don't think so much stuck with what they've got. I think they need to wait for Motorola to release an update.
Right. I think that, as far as I'm aware, as it goes, they make new releases that have specific requirements on the hardware. If you meet those requirements, then you can upgrade to them. If not, it's relatively backwards compatible, I believe.
Okay.
We mentioned Droid. It's actually been selling in the UK as Milestone. Expansus. And I don't know why Expansive have got this, but they've had an exclusivity for 2 or 3 weeks on sale.
I hadn't even realised it was on sale.
Yeah, on sale on the Milestone. So they took a lot of pre-orders. So they said they'd taken roughly 1,000 pre-orders. But they have now described this as the fastest selling gadget in the website's 11-year history, even more successful than the iPhone, which obviously got a lot of press. It sold out within 3 hours.
But who bought an iPhone on Expansive? You had to go to O2, didn't you?
Yeah. Another thing was I thought when Expansive started selling iPhones, it was very highly priced unlocked versions.
Mm.
So it's not like apples for apples we're comparing here. But I still think the Droid looks really nice. I tried to convince one of the guys at work that it was a good phone to buy, but he thought it looked ugly as hell. I just wanted.
I just thought you could then have a go at it.
Pretty much, yeah.
Oh, that's terrible.
No, not at all. He didn't want an iPhone. And he says, what other phone would you go and buy? And I said, if the iPhone wasn't around, I'd go and buy a Droid.
Yep. See, my mate Carl, who just bought the iPhone, I mean, for the last 2-3 years, no, sorry, yeah, 2 years, I think I've been trying to convince him, I've showed him it, and he'd just be
like... Is
that
the guy you didn't want to say his name earlier on about Facebook?
No, it's a different guy.
That's all right then.
And he's bought an iPhone as well, and he just keeps going on about it. It's like, he won't shut up.
Another convert.
It's still very attractive. I still think that I might go for something like a Droid as my next phone. I'm not a hater. I love the iPhone. I reckon I'll miss it, but I'm ready for a change. I think I don't use apps as much as I thought I would.
I'm a bit of an app fiend.
Yeah.
And the thing I don't find a change just for change's sake. I find that if there's something better on the market, then I'll be more interested and more appealing to go to it.
I think I would. I think there's a big part of it. I'll definitely wait for the new iPhone release next year to see what happens.
Mm.
My big thing about the iPhone as compared to the Droid, okay, it's got a slide-out keyboard, which people are saying, you know, nah for as far as typing. But even if it was just a slide-out set of buttons that you could use for gaming.
Yeah, that's true.
I think that because one of the crippling things for me on the iPhone is that for traditional type gaming where you need to input, you know, directions, it's rubbish. It's great if you want to start doing some innovative, input methods, but having buttons would be just brilliant.
Yeah, for mimicking a joypad. I'm really surprised nobody's actually just come out with a little kind of...
Plug-in.
Or like a Bluetooth-y type thing.
All right, yeah.
You know, give me a SNES Bluetooth pad.
Yep.
You know, and I could quite happily sit in my hotel and just game away.
There you go. There's a little business idea for you, then you should pursue that.
Yeah. Speaking of business ideas, the Crunch Pad is now the Juju.
Sounds a bit
Juju.
Racist.
Well, it's
yeah,
not
just to be clear,
there.
That's JOOJOO.
Oh no, I need to stop. In my head there's a whole lot of really bad jokes.
I can't remember what it is, but it stands for something in some language. I'm not even sure what. That's why it was used.
Anyway, it's now available as a pre-order, shipping within 8 to 10 weeks on thejuju.com. $499. I guess its unique feature at the moment is it boots to the internet in 9 seconds. And it, I mean, it's been demoed as delivering HD on the go, with HD then described in a video as YouTube.
Yeah, so high definition that... YouTube and Hulu. It's not exactly what we'd call 720p, is it?
No.
Which is all the screen's capable of showing.
Yeah, no, and it's... we've mentioned this before, there's a big difference between the amount of pixels you're displaying and what actual quality you're looking at.
Yeah.
You know, and the bitrate that's actually getting delivered by some of these services.
Compressed.
Yes.
And in the demonstration, it didn't cope very well on a pretty low Wi-Fi connection, so it's going to be... Because there's no local storage, it's not like you can download it.
No, and I think the thing that kills it for me, and yes, everybody's talking about cloud computing, but you know, without any local storage, there's no apps. It just feels really limited for $500.
I think it looks like a great bit of technology. So we mentioned this was originally the Crunchpad that's now been... We mentioned last week went through a change. But originally the idea of the Crunchpad was going to be $200. So it was going to be a really low cost thing that you could take around with you, you know, throw it in a bag, whatever. But now it's more than double that, so it's nearly $500 now.
Yeah, definitely.
And it changes the market it's being aimed at, because there is lots of other things available for $500 that do things better, more comprehensively. Or, you know, and conversely, things like for content like books and things like the Kindle do it cheaper and more successfully.
Mm.
So it doesn't really now know what market it's in, and I think it's all due to this bickering that's been going on.
I think it's a little bit also unfortunate that because people are aware of the Apple tablet coming out, which is, you know, we don't know exactly what it's going to do at the moment, other than, yeah, you'll be able to read books and other sort of digital media on it. I think that might sort of affect its success as well. Like, if you're in the market to buy a new gadget just because you've got money to burn, you think, oh, should I buy the Juju or should I wait another month and hear what Apple have got to say about the tablet?
Yeah, I think we're going to wait to hear what Apple are going to say, but then they're going to tell us that it's $1,000 and we're going to go, oh, whoa.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's sort of interesting, but not enough to make me buy it, certainly.
No.
On to our picks. Shaquille, we'll let you go first.
Beat it.
Just beat it.
And I go on.
Just beat it. Beat It is a game on the iPhone. And
cheap.
I'm going to kind of struggle to describe it to you, because it's sort of like music based, but it's not like what you'd think. It's not like Tap Tap Revenge or Rock Band. It's more like you... It starts off and they play you like a bit of music. So you're then supposed to memorize that bit of music. And then once you've memorized it, I think you get like so many seconds to listen to it before then you get to actually play it. And what happens is you get like... it's almost like a timeline. And you've got like a set of instruments. And what you have to do is you have to place these... the music that you heard, you have to place these beats on this sort of like... what I'd call like a beat machine with like the like slots for each beat. And it's divided into like four sections, and then you have to like lay down these beats in the sort of to match what you just heard, and then you play it back. And if you're successful, then you move on to next beat, the next bit of music, and so on and so forth.
So is it like an emasculated version of that Simon game, that where you had to remember the sequence?
Possibly, yeah. Yeah, so I mean,
colors.
I don't know how else to describe it. It's like a timeline, and it's divided into four sections, and each section has about... let me just verify that in the screenshot. It's got four slots in each of these four sections. And because the music that you heard, it's quite repetitive, so it's not like overly complicated. And then you have to sort of like figure out in your head whether the drum beat is in the first slot or the fourth slot or the second slot. And then you just match it and then you move on, and it just gets progressively harder. What else is quite nice about it is the artwork. It's like very sort of like retro.
There's a famous artist, a pixel artist, I can't remember the name. This is definitely following that style.
Yeah, it's sort of like 8-bit sort of pixel art, but it's sort of like an sort of isometric type of view. And it's all very, very colourful, and you know, the presentation is really nice.
You talk about E-Boy?
Yeah, that might be it, yeah.
And the game itself is about 179, I think.
Mm.
And it's just, you know, it's a little bit different to your usual sort of rhythm-based music games. So rather than just, you know, like listening to the music and then tapping along to it, you actually have to listen to a small section of a very simple bit of music and then try to recreate that. And it's, you know, more addictive than it sounds. So you,
I'm interested. I like the sound of it.
Mm.
I will go and buy it once I switch my phone back on.
Okay, you do that.
So my picks this week, it's another two pick week, just because they're quite cheap and cheerful. Cheap. TuneChecker.com. Very simple website, but it lets you find the cheapest price of music in the web. So you can look up albums, you can look up singles, and it'll tell you which site's offering it for the cheapest price. It also highlights free tracks. The website comes from moneysavingexpert.com. So it's like, I don't know, found the website itself looked a bit fuggly in some places, but it tells you what you need to know. The only thing it doesn't do, it doesn't compare the quality of the music you're actually buying. So it might be telling you the cheapest price, but not necessarily if that's the same quality in all the different sites. But still, and it's a...
Does it tend to come out with one site sort of that's constantly cheaper? Because it isn't sort of the idea of Amazon Tunes is it's always cheaper than iTunes.
Well, I think it depends, because some of the different sites are offering either tracks for free. So some of the times Last FM was coming up because we're offering certain tracks free.
Okay.
But again, it doesn't mention the quality of those free tracks. And also it was comparing, sometimes it was actually cheaper to buy physical CDs, believe it or not, than digital.
Amazing.
Back to that old chestnut.
Mm.
So
that sounds like a good site.
TuneChecker.com. And if you've just bought some music, you're on the Mac, and one of the things that I try to do, because it just makes iTunes work a little bit better for me in playlists, is I like to rate all my tracks. So there's a nice little free app called I Love Stars, and I'll put the link in the show notes. And all it does is it sits in the menu bar and it shows you the current track rating. It lets you rate from the menu bar. And if it's a track without a rating, then you can either have it play a little sound, or it'll just flash gently in the bar just to annoy you. And you can just pop up, give it a rating, and that's it done. And it also supports keyboard shortcuts as well, so you can, instead of having to move away from the mouse, you can just assign a keyboard shortcut and rate that track. And that's a nice little free app. And that's
very nice.
That's my picks. Chris?
Yeah, mine today is a site called Acrobat.com, and it's effectively Adobe's version of their online applications. It's been around actually for a while now, but it seems to have ramped itself up. I had a quick look back the other day. So it includes a word processor, Buzzword, where it all started, but it also now includes a spreadsheet and a presentation app. And they're all online. They're all presented sort of through the Flash player, so there's no additional downloads or anything that you need. You can also create PDF files on the go from any sort of document. You can use it as a document store. You can run online meetings through it, so it runs fully full interactive whiteboards, webcams, mix, screen sharing, and you can even give people screen control. And it offers a free account, but effectively this is Adobe's way into the sort of cloud computing and office type suites. And it's pretty impressive. It's a great thing just to go and have a check out and have a look at, especially the meetings and the screen sharing and things like that.
Mm.
Again, when we're looking at things like Google OS and also the Crunchpad, these kind of things are the thing that the websites are offering functionality that you'd otherwise be missing.
Mm. It's interesting that the Google apps got a lot of press, and Zoho to a certain extent, Microsoft for their Office ones, but these ones hardly ever.
This sort of crept up because, say, Adobe initially bought Buzzword, which was an online word processor.
Mm.
And very impressive it was too. And then they sort of bundled this in with a couple of other bits that they were working on. But now it looks like they're really pushing to start making Acrobat.com into a proposition for companies for letting workers collaborate and work on the move.
Very good. Now, we also have a final pick and it's a guest pick. So thanks, Tam, for this. Shaki was going to take us through it.
Yeah, Tam very kindly suggested this pick for us this week. It's a web service, I would say. It's at free-ocr.com, and it's basically a free online OCR tool. Basically, you upload an image, and it will scan that image, and it can scan JPEGs, GIFs, TIFFs, BMPs, and PDFs. But with the PDFs, it will only scan the first page, unfortunately. So you basically just upload your image file, and away it goes. Produce a document for you. That you don't need to register. You don't even need to put in your email address. And the only restriction that it does impose is that the image that you upload cannot be larger than 2 meg, no wider or higher than 5,000 pixels, and there's a limit of 10 images per hour. It's got like ads and stuff, but you know, if you just need to do a quick OCR for free, then definitely worth trying out.
No, definitely. And Tam had recommended it because actually I had to use it in anger, and he found it to be a very reliable service. So if you ever need to do some OCRing and you don't have an app installed, probably worth adding to your bookmarks and keeping that handy.
free-ocr.com.
Fantastic. And that's the picks for this week. Now, before we do our farewells, just a little addendum to the Crunchpad talk we had, or the juju, I should say. One I meant to mention, just when we were talking about this kind of idea of a cloud OS, was Jolly Cloud. I don't know if any of you guys saw this through the week.
No.
So it's been talked about for quite a while. It's an operating system that's coming out for netbooks. It's going to be free, and the first beta came out, I think it's come out this week. And the difference being, a lot of it does rely on cloud as well, but also local storage, and it has apps installed locally. And, you know, so it's... And the front end to it, I think, looks lovely. You know, if I was wanting to run some software on a netbook, I would be looking at something like this. So you can run Skype from it, you can run, you know, Dropbox syncing, you can run Boxy on it, as well as taking advantage of all the cloud services. So that's at Jolly Cloud, JOLICloud.com. So if you've got a netbook, well worth giving that a little whirl. So that's our podcast for another week. If you want to send us some feedback, send us some guest picks, then info@digitaloutbox.com is our email address. If you want to leave us a comment, our website is www.digitaloutbox.com. We're on Twitter, Digital Outbox, and also we'd love to hear from you via Skype. So if you've got any queries, questions, feedback, praise for Shaquille now that he's back in position, then... use the Skype address of Digital Outbox. Shaq, where can we find out more about you?
You can visit me on my blog at shaquille9.com, and you can follow me on Twitter at ShaqN.
Chris?
My Twitter's CheesyUK, and my blog is chrishutchinson.org.uk.
And my blog is ind.net, and my Twitter account is Shweepa. So, thanks for joining us. I think our next episode will be our very special review of the year. So
exciting times.
Hopefully you can tune in for that. Catch you later on.
See ya.
Bye.
There you go.
How's your saliva now, Ian?
Oh, still very... Honestly, it's just...
Please don't make that sound.
And it's definitely not the diet brew. I think it's... To be honest, I think it's just because it's an hour and 15 minutes rather than a 40-minute podcast.
Yes.
Shaq's back. Don't we know it?
Hey, don't blame me for that.
Why?
Because what difference does it make whether I'm here or not that you have a longer podcast?
God, see, just get a little bit angry and then you sound all awake.
It's not like I speak slowly, so you have a longer podcast.
Yeah, I'm just glad you resisted your own juju.
Oh. No, I think Chris mentioned it, didn't he, that he thought it came from like a language somewhere. And I was thinking, is it not something to do with Jamaican people, you know, like with the voodoo stuff? And I know juju, sometimes I've heard them mention that it's like supposed to be a reference to like when you curse somebody or something like that. Juju.
I thought it was good luck rather than bad luck.
Okay, let me...
Urban Dictionary says it is karma, bad luck.
Uh-huh.
It's bad juju to speak ill of others.
Yeah, that's how I remember it, bad juju.
Bad juju.
I didn't think that name through then, did
and
I?
And also somebody's added a third Urban Dictionary. What results from Michael Arrington failing to create a proper contract with Shady Singapore Business Fusion Garage? That's what juju means.
There's some weird things for a juju and Urban Dictionary that I can't say. That is some bad juju.
How long does it take to find quotes? Jesus.
It's really not going to be very interesting either, is it?
Yeah, it's difficult now because if you type
it's
juju
never stopped
Google...
you for the last 10 weeks.
The African word juju means magical device. Now that's worth waiting for, isn't it? Except for the African word juju is spelled J-O-U-J-O-U.